TheLifeStream.net presents On the Way to a Smile, Case of Barrett.
It had been several months since that day, the chosen day. After helping Tifa and Cloud build their home, Barrett entrusted his best friend Diane's orphaned daughter Marlene to the two of them and embarked on a journey. It was a journey to settle the sins of his past. Before departing, he offered several words to Tifa, who shouldered the same guilt.
Don't just take. Prove you know how to give.
He thought doing that would lead her, at the very least, to redemption. But his own words brought him no solace, and Barrett remained unsure of what he was supposed to do. Being with Marlene gave him peace of mind. He felt guilty for putting it off just one more day. He knew he had to leave, even if he had no purpose. Put some space between him and his heart's crutch. Bear himself to the wilds. This was a quick fix departure. For half a year he roamed the world. Other than the geostigma problem, life outside Midgar had turned to some semblance of normality. The only difference was that hardly anyone used Mako. Not a single reactor was operating. At one time, this would have been considered a victory for Barrett and the anti-Shinra movement, but the feeling of being lost overcame any sense of satisfaction. There was no place for a man with a gun grafted to his right arm, except amidst battle and chaos.
Take those away. Where do I get to pay for my sins?
He felt panicked even. Sometimes he wandered the forest looking for a fight, taking down monsters that attacked. But all the feverish battles would bring was self-loathing.
All I'm killing is stress.
And every time, Bart would let out a roar.
Gah!
It happened when he was walking amongst the crowds in Junon. Something had bumped into his gun arm, and when he looked down, a young child was crying, blood running from his forehead. When Barrett hastened to tend to the wound, a woman who was surely the boy's mother came running.
Please, please, forgive my boy. I beg of you, I'll do anything.
The mother's eyes were trained on the machine gun installed on Barrett's right arm.
In peacetime, I'm as sane as the monster.
Times were changing. He had to think of new ways to atone that benefited the new age. He couldn't exactly grasp what that was, but he knew he was supposed to change first. Barrett went to visit Old Man Sakaki, an artisan who once crafted prosthetic arms for him. The first model was a simple design, fashioned with a hook on the end. Barrett was dissatisfied. He wanted to do more, like dig in the dirt. The old man had made him a shovel arm, or drive wooden posts. A custom-built hammer arm did nicely. But Barrett wasn't satisfied by any of these. One day, the old man told a visibly displeased Barrett,
"Your head's filled with revenge against Shinra. You'll never be satisfied by anything you stick on that arm of yours. Just take this and don't come back."
What the old man had passed on to him was an adapter that let him attach implements to his arm. By using it, Barrett could attach various prostheses, or weapons, to his right arm.
"What you attach is entirely up to you. I suggest you give it some thought."
Despite the old man's warnings, Barrett didn't do much thinking at all. The days that ensued were filled with him trying out any weapon he could get his hands on, and boosting his firepower. For the next several years, all Barrett attached to his arm were weapons. When Barrett returned to the workshop, he asked the old man to make him a new arm, one with a softer texture, with a hand on the end, one that nobody would fear, one that would let him melt into ordinary life. Old Man Sakaki only gave a snort and stared at Barrett.
I'm not just about fighting. I don't want people afraid of me no more.
So, who are you trying to be?
Like I said.
Barrett started to respond and searched inside himself, only to find he had no answer.
Shit. The hell should I know?
I'll need a week, all right?
Fine. Why are you doing that?
If you've got no other plans, why don't you help my nephew out with his work, and in return,
Forget it. I don't need no reward.
Well, I'll think of something.
The next day, Barrett rode along in the truck. Old Man Sakaki's nephew was driving. Barrett recognized the machine as the same type that took him all over the place as a kid. Its engine ran on steam from burning coal and heating up water in the boiler. It took four men working together to run it. One driver at the handle, one engineer to keep tabs on the engine's output, and two boiler men to pump coal into the chamber. At the rear of the truck's massive body, a bed was attached that could carry around 10 people. The coal occupied about 5 men's worth of space, and Barrett commanded about 2 men's worth of space that was left. He was sprawled out face up, gazing at the sky.
Man, this is slow going.
It was nobody's fault. Large steam-powered trucks had always plodded along like this. The men were dripping with sweat and working as hard as they could. Everything was running at full power. A middle-aged boiler man came out onto the bed for a break.
Sorry to barge in while you're pissed, but I gotta take a seat.
I ain't pissed, so don't be sorry.
You're only pissed enough that the anger's jumping off your skin.
Barrett sat up and glared at the man.
The fuck's your problem?
And there you go. I'm right, see?
The two fell silent for a while. Eventually, the boiler man opened his mouth again.
You plan to be our bodyguard forever?
I'm just doing the old man a favor. I don't know what comes after that.
Well, you're not cut out for it.
Being a bodyguard? Ain't nobody more cut out for that than me.
Don't know about that.
The boiler man fell silent. Barrett waited for him to continue.
What do I look like to this fool? Hey, say what you're gonna say, man. Maybe the guy can give me a clue about what to do in my life. What type do I look like to you?
The type that, instead of just taking out monsters that come along, goes out looking for monster dens to smash.
What do you know? Maybe I do.
Even if you don't know where those dens are.
Making me sound like an idiot.
It's not easy what you do. Maybe you ought to be proud, huh?
Barrett looked the other man in the eye and laughed. The boiler man returned a puzzled look.
Can I hit you up for some advice?
Depends on the advice.
I want to make up for my sins. That's why I'm on the road. But no matter how much time goes on, I can't figure out the way to do it. Probably just the man you say. What do you think a guy like that's got to do to atone?
I'd say it depends on the sins.
Countless people died because of me.
Barrett recalled the time he blew up Reactor 1 with his comrades in Avalanche. Damage far beyond what they'd expected. The city in panic. How his friends kept dying. Citizens he never knew. The boiler man saw Barrett had fallen silent.
You just gotta stand tall and live. That's all. Just keep on trying whatever you think it takes to make amends.
I was afraid you'd say that.
So what if you don't know where the monster dens are? You get out there and smash them. Maybe one day, you'll get rid of the monsters. Hey! Over there!
The boiler man pointed behind the truck. A small but threatening monster was giving chase. Barrett pointed the end of his right arm at the monster and fired without bothering to get a bead. The creature's body shattered with the rat-a-tat-tat of rapid-fire bullets.
Sucks to be a monster today,
When Barrett turned to tell the Boilerman not to worry, he noticed the Boilerman's gaze was fixed on his right arm. It was the same look as the woman from Junon.
Maybe I'm the monster. No, man. The monster's den might be somewhere inside of me.
The Boilerman wasn't kind enough to answer. The truck's destination was a small village that made its collective living growing potatoes in the field. One after another, hemsacks full of potatoes were packed onto the truck bed, which had gone through half the coal since their departure. As he helped with the work, Barrett wondered,
"Well, they sell these potatoes in town. How much do they go for?"
No question the truck team's wages were tacked onto the village's asking price for the potatoes. Food prices were a problem in Midgar. Too high, even for a time of crisis. But seeing so many people hard at work, he started to realize there wasn't any way around it. Once the Mako supply stopped, most engine-powered farming equipment was rendered useless. Raising potatoes without it had to be more than arduous. Barrett soon found himself deep in thought.
"If they can't use machinery, people have no choice but to move their bodies. Now, we got plenty of people. Midgar, all kinds of folks with no jobs, struggling just to find food, right? Sure, they could just gobble up whatever's growing at their feet, but then they just run out of food. Yeah, they gotta sow some seeds, get some plants on the ground, take care of them. For that matter, they gotta raise some livestock. Ah, bingo. If we all had a mind for it, the day's bound to come where we can live without want. At least not for food. When we need machines, we can use coal, like with the truck. What we gotta do from now on is go back to the way things were before Mako. Times might be a little tight. Things might move kind of slow. For someone impatient like me, it might even be unbearable. That's how it's gotta be. Well, like, that's how times change."
Barrett smiled, pleased with how quickly he arrived at his own idea. Then he got to pondering what he could do. First, he'd attach a hoe to his right arm and start plowing the fields. He'd make the best of his powerful body and do the work of five men.
"But wait, new times call for a new leader. Is that my role?"
Barrett's thoughts picked up speed. He imagined himself firing off orders, his friends straining to catch each and every word.
"On it, Barrett,"
Jessie would say as she flew out of the room, with Wedge and Biggs close behind. But then scenes from his days as Avalanche's leader came to mind, and for a moment, his vision of a bright future changed to deep regret.
"Damn. There I go again."
He glanced around, but no one was looking at him. The whole lot were gathered in front of a house, watching as old man Sakaki's nephew spoke with a middle-aged man who must have been from the village. Barrett stepped forward to listen to the conversation.
"I haven't got any problem taking your daughter to Midgar, but she looks awful weak. We might not make it in time."
"What?"
The man carried a young girl upon his back, who slumped lifelessly. She was a beautiful girl, but from one arm dribbled a black liquid. The horrid geostigma, and an awful case at that. Barrett had walked into the kind of moment he hated most.
"Right now, there's a crisis in front of you. Can't do a damn thing about it."
Barrett knew that even if she went to Midgar, she wouldn't find any decent treatment.
"Maybe it would be best to hear that. Shouldn't you spend your last days quietly in the village? But saying that would rob father and child of their hope. Is this all I can do? Shut up and let matters take their course."
Barrett wanted to scream.
"Wouldn't going to Midgar just be a waste of time?"
Barrett looked beside him and saw the familiar face of the Boilerman, scowling.
"Probably."
"Then I'd better tell him."
He started to walk toward the man and his daughter.
"Hold up."
But the man wouldn't listen. Bart went after him, hoping to stop him before his words brought despair to the man and his daughter.
You think we should just let her go to Midgar so long as it makes her happy, right? Even if there's no point?
Yeah.
Well, that's all well and good if you got an airship, but all we got ourselves is a truck. The bed gets hot, it's a hard ride, you know that. What do you do if she ends up dying even sooner because of that?
Still, come on, man.
Don't worry, I'll be the one to tell him. Maybe I kill her pop's hope, but the girl should be at home for the end.
Barrett didn't know if he or the boiler man had the right. He had to think. His mind started to whirl. Again, he wanted to scream, but he held it in. After a time, the boiler man came back without even joining the conversation.
She just drew her last breath.
What?
You wanna hear what her last words were?
No, he thought. But the boiler man continued.
Please take me to Midgar.
The boiler man clenched his fists. He knew he had been wrong.
Duh! Nobody's wrong!
Full of rage, he lifted his right arm to the skies. Barret stayed in the village to witness the girl's burial. He asked her haggard father if there was anything he could do.
If only we'd had an airship. I used to be a crewman aboard the Gelnica. If she was still flying, maybe my baby girl wouldn't have had to die. It's just a short hop from here to Midgar.
Listen, man.
He knew he had to say something.
I know how you feel, but they can't cure the stigma. Not even in Midgar. If only this, if only that. As soon as you start thinking about what the world of what has had over reality, tomorrow became hard to ascertain.
Barret had experienced that himself.
And lamenting what you never had any control over in the first place, the way this father was, is even worse.
While Barret searched for the right words, the man started to speak.
It doesn't have to be Midgar. Any place. The moment we heard they could fix the stigma there, we could be en route with the sick. If we had an airship, we'd be ready.
Ready?
My daughter's not the only one suffering from geostigma.
Though he'd only just lost his child, the father's eyes were fixed on what was ahead. The future Barret had painted in his mind while packing potatoes onto the truck had faded entirely.
Why can't we just run a few of the airships and the other useful machinery? Hell, in Midgar they use work vehicles and other machines. Why not an airship then? As long as we don't waste the Mako. Times have changed. I'm going to do the same.
Not far to the east of Rocket Town stretched a desert region where hardly any vegetation grew. Situated there was an oil derrick, about 50 meters high, and a small aging refinery built next to it. Several men and women stood beneath the weathered derrick. One of them was Shara, dressed in a white lab coat. The engineer standing next to her shook his head.
It's down 70% since last month. Bad news, that's what this is. So how are things on your end?
We're done. Can't say it compares to Mako, but we've managed to take the refining process quite a ways.
Knew you'd pull it off. Now, we just need the stuff to refine, huh?
The engineer directed his stare toward the ground. Shara couldn't help but follow his gaze. She thought of the milling drill pipe, worrying away to dig up any oil left underground.
Just a little more.
Shara clapped her hands together in prayer, but the stain on the back of her left hand wasn't oil. It was the stigma. Rocket Town was once the base for the Shinra Company's space program. The engineers had eventually settled down there, turning it into a bustling village. When Bard arrived in the town, he saw children playing. Some were the same age as Marlene. His eyes lit up immediately.
What you kids playing?
The children looked up, their eyes slowly taking in the sight.
How about letting an old guy join in?
The children bolted.
Just gotta put up with this till my hand's done.
You're scary even without the gun.
Someone called out from behind him.
Wait a minute. You're...
He couldn't put a name to the face.
I doubt you'd remember me. I'm from the Highwind crew.
The Highwind was the name of the airship Bard and the others wound up boarding during their journey to save the planet.
Oh, I got you. Well, thanks for helping out back then.
You're very welcome.
Bard wasted no time in asking the man to take him to Cid. As they walked, he heard a dull metal pounding.
Break time's over, y'all. We better get a move on.
What y'all up to?
What do you think? This is where Cid's gang comes home to roost, after all.
An airship?
Go ahead. See for yourself.
Past the long line of houses, a large area opened up, and Bard could see an enormous airship.
Yeah, just like the old Highwind. Under construction. Well, shit. Would you look at that?
The airship was girdled by a crude scaffold. On top of the scaffold, which didn't look like it would earn any applause for its safety precautions, worked about 20 townsfolk. All Bard could hear was the shrill retort from the metal armor plating being hammered into place. The airship looked all but finished.
Hey, she's all done.
Yeah, but just the trimmings. Take a gander.
The man pointed at an empty engine bay.
It's because we can't use Mako anymore. That engine's gonna take some time.
From out of nowhere came the earth-shaking crash of an explosion. Bart panicked and hit the dirt.
Captain's over there.
The old comrade laughed, pointing to the garage behind the airship. Inside the garage, a single engine that looked like it would fit an airship sat upon a massive workbench. Several men peered at it from a safe distance, and all of them wore goggles. Again, the sound of an explosion. Bart flinched. One of the men took off his goggles and ran up to the engine.
Son of a bitch!
Cid leaned in to examine the engine, gnashing his teeth as if he were about to tear off a piece.
Goddamn piece of shit! I'm gonna flatten you into last week's scrap!
Barrett grinned. He hadn't heard such foul language in ages.
He ain't changed one bit, this one.
Cid sauntered over to Barrett, spouting profanity with every step.
Talk like that and God's gonna get in your case.
God? You haul his ass down here. I gotta have words with him.
The two quickly filled each other in on recent events.
I left Marlene with Tifa. Since she's taken to her and all.
Good for you. Whole world's clapping you on the back. So Cloud's with Tifa?
Yeah. Tifa opened up a bar just like the old days. Cloud was helping out, but sounds like he got his own business keeping him tied up now. A delivery service.
Cloud? Run a business?
You can bet it's Tifa kicking his ass into shape.
I see. In the end, it's the women who wears the pants.
How's Shara?
She's about the same.
He steered the conversation away by talking about how Red 13 kept dropping by. How Yuffie was teaching the Wushu fighting style to the kids in Wutai. And how Vincent had stayed completely out of touch.
So, what you need? I'm a busy man.
You're building an airship, right?
That I am.
Would you let me help out?
You? What's a tenderfoot like you gonna do?
Normally, Bart would offer an enraged retort, but he let it bounce off and told Cid what he'd been through.
If you had an airship, man, you'd have all kinds of saved lives on your hands. Like folk with a stigma. If they found a cure somewhere, you could bring them there in a flash. You'd even fly guys in from all over the place who could treat it. Deliver loads of food. Anything people need to live, you know?
Well now, you like to lay it all out. We're talking about using Mako here. You know how much Mako energy it takes to make one short hop with an airship?
Hell no. But listen,
Bart recounted what he'd been thinking about on his way there.
Just can't be greedy. Use Mako when you shorten the planet's life, true enough. But I'm not talking enough to change things down the line. Just a little. Plant all forgiving us for just taking what we need to stay alive.
Bullshit. What happened to Avalanche's leader?
Bard had nothing to say to that. As far as coming to terms with his past, he thought he'd had his own answer. But now that someone was calling him on it, he searched for the right words. The gloom took over deep inside, and he raised his right arm. He was ready to open fire, then realized he was indoors and stopped short. But he did scream.
Gah!
Everyone in the room turned to stare at Barrett.
I'm sorry. As you were.
He faked his best smile. Then he hung his head, searching for the words to explain himself. Instead of words, scenes from his past sprung to mind. That way too serious look on Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse's faces.
Come on, say something. Come on, guys, blame me.
He shook his head, as if to shoo the three figures away, then glanced up. Sid looked blurry.
What the hell's with you?
Sid, you gotta tell me. I don't know what to do. My past like a minefield full of mistakes. But there had to have been some things that were right. But what? Which one was right? Which was wrong? Which me am I supposed to be from now on? No, I want to change. Am I not allowed because of my past? Huh? Am I supposed to keep this gun stock on my arm scaring kids? Is that how I'm supposed to make up for my sins? I don't know anymore. Help me, Sid. What am I supposed to do?
In the end, Bart did open fire on the ceiling, tearing several holes in it. Sid looked up at the ceiling.
Well, for starters, you can fix that.
Sid sauntered over to Bard as he worked up a sweat fixing the holes in the ceiling. Out of embarrassment, Bard chose to ignore him and continued his repairs. Sid sat himself down a short distance away.
You calm down now.
Excuse me.
Sid shook his head as if to say no worries.
Come on, I want you out with something.
Bard stopped working and peered at Sid.
First, Mako, you hit the nail on the head. We'll just take a little from the planet, just what we need. We had the same idea. The truth is, airships are useful, especially when the world's in the middle of trying to pick itself up. If someday they tell me they don't need mine anymore, I guess I can just find me a spot, a nice view, set her down, turn her into my house.
Sid went on to tell him about the current energy situation. As things stood, Mako reactors around the world were at a halt. And that was by no means because the general public felt remorse for Mako usage shortening the planet's life. There was a more practical problem. Upkeep was difficult without Shinra, who had run the Mako reactors. But the real reason no one had restarted the reactors?
By now, everybody knows that Mako Energy sucked out the live stream and consumed it. And that day, they all experienced firsthand how terrible the live stream could be. They're scared. Scared of pissing the planet off.
Bart remembered the sight of it vaporizing meteor closing in on Midgar, just moments before it would have destroyed the planet. The live stream's power was overwhelming, surely far beyond anything man could ever produce.
Ain't nobody want to touch Mako with a 10-foot pole.
So you saying there's no way to make Mako energy now?
Yep, probably not. There's still some Mako left that got sucked into Midgar's reactors and never got used. Right now those Mako reserves power every Mako engine worldwide. Every leaders are managing it and divvying it up to people who they figure need it. Mainly, it's to get machinery running that'll help with reconstruction.
Yeah, I know. I was a Midgar. But come on, what's wrong with spinning just one of them reactors now and then? Look at how scary it is. Forgive me, Biggs, Wedge, Jesse.
Won't get another drop of Mako out of the ground there.
The flow of the live stream's changed.
You checked it out?
Red told me. If he says so, it must be true enough.
Barret was at a loss for words. Was the planet telling them not to use Mako anymore?
Now, if we were to throw together a Mako reactor in some other place, that's a whole nother story.
But first we gotta find that place, transport all the materials, no telling when we'd finish. Then there's the matter of how to transport those materials in the first place.
That's no good at all.
Yep. Once those Mako reserves run out, it's all over.
The world will revert back to the age of coal. We'll just have to poke along in the good old steam trucks again. Go back to chocobos are the fastest form of ground transportation, thank you, ma'am. Not that that's so bad, really.
So you want to live as a quitter? You said we gotta go through life facing backwards. Yeah, we fucked up big time, I know. Maybe it is best we don't go walking down the same path. So what? We just gonna tread water? Why can't we search for another way?
Which brings us to oil.
Oil? Not useless goop.
To Barret, who worked in coal mines, the mention of oil was a surprise. All it was ever good for was burning in lamps.
It's only been useless since Mako came along.
Truth is, oil was supposed to usher us into a new era. We even had some respectable technology produce different fuels from oil.
Once Mako showed up, the technology was carried over into Mako production.
And so, oil hadn't up and vanished from history.
But Sid continued, explaining how he and his team had pulled out old records and located an oil field. Luckily, it wasn't too far from Rocket Town. On site, they found facilities to drill for oil and refine it into gasoline. Half collapsed, maybe, but nonetheless. Sid and his companions had restored the facilities to an operating status, but gasoline didn't yield enough power. They needed a more potent fuel. They had persisted in efforts to that end, and at last, prospects for making jet fuel were looking bright. In tandem with that, work was underway to revamp the engines to run on the new fuel. But that wasn't going quite as well.
When did you fools ever find the time?
After it happened. Right after.
Well, damn, Sid. That's incredible.
Like I said, we had the records. There ain't a speck of new technology. All we did was bring the old tech back to life.
Whatever you did, this means the end of coal, don't it?
Barret, having grown up in a coal mining town, had mixed feelings about that.
Times change. We just happen to be born on the cusp, that's all.
Can't say I feel one way or the other about that.
Then how about it? You feel lucky? The coming age is our chance to try all kinds of things.
True that.
The only unlucky part is...
What?
With so much to try, we're all gonna run out of time. Ain't that a bitch?
Sid and Barret set out east from Rocket Town. They walked a full day before reaching their destination. Shara came out to greet the two of them.
Yo!
Barret was happy to see her again after so long. She looked like she hadn't changed at all, but Barret noticed the stigma on her hand right away. She must have sensed it as she made an attempt to hide her hand beneath her coat.
Well, how you feeling? Don't push yourself.
We're all gonna run out of time.
Sid looked up at the oil derrick. It showed no sign of operation.
Why the hell isn't this
thing... We shut it down this morning. We might have gotten more, but the output had dropped all the way to 10% of when we started drilling, so we had to shut down the pump.
Sid slumped his shoulders.
The first day it came spurting out, even without the damn pump. We turned jet black from all the oil raining down, laughed our asses off.
The planet ain't gonna give us nothing else, huh?
That's not true. The planet has all kinds of things in store for us, like coal, oil, Mako, you might say. There might even be things we don't know about yet. We'll be okay, as long as we don't misuse them. As long as we don't get greedy. If we're resourceful, the planet must be concerned about us, After all, the life stream that courses through it was once the lives of people who lived right where we stand.
Sid and Bart contemplated those words.
Shira. She'll always be concerned about Sid. Whether she lives or returns to the planet. Same goes for Sid. The same for me.
Shira.
After a short time passed, he opened his mouth again.
Shira, how's the fuel?
Fine. It partly depends on your engine efficiency, but you should be able to fly once around the planet. More than enough for a test flight, I'd say. But what do you think?
The engine's not ready. Nothing's working. The end's nowhere in sight. Listen, Shira.
What is it?
Sid had fallen silent. Bart chimed in despite himself.
Sid just wants you to help out with the engine development. Kick his ass into shape, you know? Just because the fuel's all done, there's still heaps of work to do.
I know.
Shira looked at Sid.
I can't throw in the towel yet.
Bart needed to say more.
And after you build the engine, there's still lots for you to do.
Shira answered only with a smile. The three of them looked up at the derrick in silence.
Barrett, you know about any oil fields?
You just leave it to me.
Barrett had no more doubts.
Hey, planet. Hey, all you lies are coursed through it. If you want to punish me, you'll go on ahead and do it. I'm going to fight back with all I got. The only ones who get to punish me are the folk who are still living. I'm gonna live, so the living have a tomorrow.
When Barrett returned to his workshop, Old Man Sakaki held out a new prosthesis, made entirely the way he'd ordered it. The hand was made of wood and had a worn feel to it. It wasn't meant to fit an adapter, but attached directly to the arm. Barrett looked at the hand, then at the old man.
I still got journeying to do. I gotta find some land that yields oil. I may end up going places nobody else would dare. Dangerous places. There's no telling what monsters I'll find. So I still need a weapon. Not just to defend myself. I'm not allowed to stop fighting. If my fighting means somebody else doesn't have to, then that's my calling. No. My penance.
After listening to Barrett's uncharacteristically coherent words, Old Man Sakaki went into the back and then returned with some sort of parcel. When he opened it, Barrett saw a prosthesis inside with traces of rust on it. It was an exquisitely made steel hand. Even the fingers looked like they moved.
With practice, you could even write with it. How well you do depends entirely upon you. This was to be a payment of sorts for helping my nephew, but since you don't seem to need it, I'll hold on to it.
I'm sorry. You went through so much trouble to make it.
No trouble. I made it 4 years ago. Come pick it up when everything's over. I'll have the rust all polished off.
After leaving the workshop and walking for a while, Bart thought to himself,
I should have written a letter to Marlene. Maybe I'll call her, too. No. Once it's all over, I'll come back here and write it with that hand the old guy made me. And I'll take that letter back to Marlene myself.
He wanted to scream. So at his heart's behest, he did.
I'm coming!